You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yo, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug about Antares and Auto-Tune. Antares makes the original industry standard Auto-Tune that we all know and love the sound of. We are sponsored by them, so if you visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/Auto-Tune, we do get a small kickback from every purchase. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please enjoy this episode.
One, 2, 3.
Hello, and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Long Drive Down the Range, Lou.
I really want to buy some golf pants now.
Yo, I'm horrible at these nicknames. I should think about them. I keep saying that. Every single beginning of episode, I say I should think more about these nicknames before we keep going on, and then I keep hitting start before I think about it. That's my fault. It's on me.
We should actually make a coffee table book and sell it at Starbucks of all the
horrible nicknames. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, what was it? Luscious Lou.
Luscious Lou, Luxurious Lou. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to avoid some different Lous. Today's episode, we want to talk about something that's pretty important, and I think a lot of people get the wrong idea, and talk about some of the frustrations of it as well, which is scaling, and as well as growing your career. So how do you scale safely, grow your business, grow your entity safely without growing too fast? A lot of companies and a lot of people try to grow their business a little bit too fast. In the end, they end up they put themselves in a bad corner. And I think that that is something that happens. And I would also say that a lot of times people are too afraid to take the next steps as well. That is also a quite common occurrence. So we're going to talk about growing your business, scaling your business, but as well as talking about the frustration of the early stages of growth. Unfortunately, I mean, Lou, you probably know this. I know this for sure. Unfortunately, learning how to do audio better is just one of those things that takes nothing other than time. No matter how talented you are, no matter how good you've been at whatever you did when you were a kid, like, this is just one of those things that it just takes time. And I think all of us, I mean, I've been frustrated with my own progression before. Have you?
Oh, yeah. Have you ever listened to an old mix?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What impression do you get? Do you feel like, oh, I sucked? Or do you feel like, oh, not bad?
I feel like, oh, damn. And I sent that out? That's terrible.
See, I usually do the opposite. I do... that's not that bad, actually, because I just have really low expectations of myself. Like, yeah. Oh, there's no way. It probably sucked 2 years ago. When I listened to mix 2 years ago, I'm like, not bad, not bad.
You ever listen back to old mixes and they're like, I wonder what revision one versus revision two sounds like? And you go to two and you're like, okay, not bad. And then you go to one and you're like, huh, that was actually better. I know I've done that. Some people overthink their mixes, and then I've like told the client, like, hey, I know I sent you that one out, but can you take a listen to this one and tell me what you think? They're like, oh, that's so much better. What is it? It's like, oh, I just tried something different. In reality, it's the one that I second-guessed myself on.
So today we want to talk about getting better and like learning how to get better and trying to get over the frustrations and kind of growing. So, Lou, I'm in a position right now, genuinely, and I think that some other people listening might be in this position too. I've been struggling the last couple of years of raising my prices. Okay. I can't tell if it's because I'm scared. I can't tell if it's because, just for various reasons, I have a hard time raising my prices, but I am definitely, definitely overwhelmed with the work that I get.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I know what you were charging and what we've talked about going forward too, but, honestly, this is something I struggled with too, but I think it kind of boils down into something really simple, which is just don't overthink what you're charging people early. Like, you're still in your beginning stages. There's going to be a lot more people who know more than you, and there's going to be a lot of people who can mix better than you. But unless you got plaques or big name artists on these songs and everything, you shouldn't really be charging as much as those people. So I think like a big part of what people get confused when they first start is like, what should I charge? It's like, take what somebody who you know isn't really doing much, but is still significantly better than you, and you're trying to be competitive and whatever, take their price and cut it in half. And then next time, now that you're at their level, look at the next person up from them. Look at their price, cut your price in half. And it's funny because all these prices are so variable, but realistically, it keeps you humble in the idea like, I'm really trying to build my clientele, so I'm not trying to charge what they charge and then come under expectation. But if there's somebody who's willing to pay me something and I can grow with that client, I can eventually let them know that my prices are going up. And if they really like me, they'll stick around. Or in the meantime, I can just keep myself afloat with these clients who are not trying to spend as much, but still need work done.
I think that for me, yeah, and I know I'm the one that asked this question, I bring it up, but I do something that my professor in school said that we should do, which is do as much as you can for as little as possible. And then once the workload becomes frustrating that you can't believe that you're charging so little and you're getting frustrated because of what you're charging, then raise your prices.
I like that.
So it's like keep your prices where they are unless you're frustrated because you're charging too little. And I would say use your best judgment, because I know a lot of people. In fact, I can name three companies off the top of my head in the tiny little state of Utah, three people and companies that quit doing music because of the pride that they had and how back in the day I used to have to charge this much. And then all of a sudden in mid-2000s, this person only offered me this much money, and that's when I realized I'm out of the game. I don't want to do it anymore. Or like things where like the studio went out of business. And there's also been successful stories where one studio adapted and they expanded and went into a couple $1 million loan, from what I understand, and they're charging the same prices. It's cheaper prices, and it's totally worth it. It's really low cost over there. So I've seen different things. I would say when you want to charge up, wait till you're frustrated. But I would say that don't charge so much that you are out of the marketplace. Stay in the marketplace. Stay competitive. Don't be prideful and say, just because I used to use all this analog gear and I grew up cutting records myself, I have to charge more. Nah. Like, if you're from Arkansas or Mississippi or anything like that, or let's see, somewhere Midwest, Michigan, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I really doubt that you're in a position where you can justify being that much more expensive than everybody else in a similar marketplace.
And just so you guys know, don't charge more just because you have analog gear. That's stupid. Honestly.
That's also like, why you don't buy analog. Part of the reasons why you don't buy it in the early stages.
Yeah, don't buy it in the early stages until you know what you're doing with it. But if you have analog gear and you're charging more because of your personal choice of overhead, let's be honest. I know a lot of people who can mix in the box better than some people that I know who have libraries worth of gear. I know people who have, you know, $200,000-$300,000 worth of gear in their house, but they still rely on an external engineer who primarily mixes in the box.
Did you say choose the overhead work? What did you say?
Don't charge the client for your personal choice of overhead.
Don't charge the client for your overhead. Yo, I love that. That's why you don't invest in analog gear. It has the worst return on investment, typically speaking.
Unless you're me, who just buys it because the investment is towards booking a client. Yeah. But if you don't have that type of client, don't buy it unless you really know what you're doing with it and you really think it's worth the investment. But I've seen people do with a Rode NTK mic into an Apollo, and they get a better sound than some people I know with the, you know, UC800 into a 1073 vintage Neve, yeah, into a CL1B, like, original, and then into a Burl converter. Like, I've heard some of these recordings, guys, and they're not all good. Great just because they have a $20,000 chain. It's not true.
And I would say, like, really, though, at the end of the day, although it may not have returns, unless it's a label situation, if someone says, do you have a specific type of gear? Unless you're a high-end studio or a label scenario, if they ask you what gear you have, that's usually a red flag for a client.
Yeah, usually, actually.
Because, like, that means, like, oh, this person's going to be a hassle and going to be super into it and think they're the engineer the entire time. And the entire time you're mixing and they're asking for revisions, you're like, do you just want to mix this, bro? Those are the clients that you're going to get.
Unless, once again, just like you said, unless the client you have is just booking the studio and you're not engineering. And at that point, you're selling a different product. If you're selling yourself as a mixing engineer, recording engineer, mastering engineer, you don't have to buy it unless you personally really want it. Professionally speaking, you don't need to buy it. But if you're a studio and all you do is book your studio, you yourself are not an engineer, it's a good idea to have some eye candy for the clients. But don't pretend that you need an SSL AWS console 948, whatever, to book a ton of clients. Like, most people don't even know how to use that thing, so don't worry about it.
There you go. So we weren't meant to talk about hardware, and we're not going to continue talking about it, but let's talk about going back to growth and how we slowly grow, right?
Well, so I feel like we just touched base on one of them that was different from the original, which is overhead.
A low overhead. People die because of overhead.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what overhead is in business, overhead means how much you have to pay, like your rent costs, your regular costs, your expenses.
It's not the mics over the drums.
So it's not what you purchase, but your overhead is what you have to pay every month. So this might include your rent. This might include insurance. Basically, the minimum amount of dollars to break even.
Mm-hmm.
So we pay in this room right now, because it's LA and it's super expensive. For this room, we pay $2,700 a month. Or about $3,000 a month. We'll just round it up. $3,000 a month. And then we have to pay $100 for insurance.
Yep.
And then we have our security system monthly bills. We have some things that we have subscribed on PayPal. And we have to have, since we opened up a second room, we had to get the second generation, like this another Pro Tools iCloud thing.
Yep.
iLock Cloud. And we had to get a few other things for the studio. And we continue to get a few things for the studio that are on monthly subscription. That's our overhead. Yep. And for us, it's quite a bit. And most people would die because of their overhead. In fact, most companies die because they put too much overhead. For example,
they scale too fast without building a foundation.
Exactly. A lot of people are like, oh, 36 months, no interest financing. Let me max that out on stuff that's not going to bring them clients. You max out your credit card to Sweetwater, it ain't going to make you money. I'm going to tell you that. Be careful this holiday season. So for reals though, overhead, keep your overhead low, as low as you can. I always hate when we talk about getting investments or like going into debt for something because we need it right now. Because at the end of the day, we ask, how many times have I done that this month?
No, we were talking about that. I was about to buy a piece of gear on Sweetwater. They had that very enticing...
the 3 or 6 months, no credit required.
Nope. Oh, yeah, the 6 months. And then Zounds has the 12 months, and they upped it to 18 months for Christmas. I'm like...
Dang.
Ooh, man, that is... Oh, so for $50 a month, I can have like this, I don't know, Rupert Neve dual channel preamp, right? You know, something cool. But realistically, do I really need it? The answer is no. Has any of my clients ever requested something outside of a Neve or an SSL? No. And I'm not going to buy a Neve because somebody wants me to have a Neve. I honestly don't always like the sound of a 1073 anyways, so... Why am I about to buy this thing that I honestly don't need? Keep the overhead low. Like, why would I want to spend an extra $400 or $500 a month on gear nobody asked for?
Yeah, I'm drawing the line. This is how we're going to draw the line. I'm going to really do bold, general statements because I want to be called out by people that are in the anomaly, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to make a line. The line is only buy gear with the profits that you made at the end of the year. Instead of going to Uncle Sam via your taxes, spend the money at the end of the year before you file for taxes.
Yeah.
And make sure that you're not making a profit. That's when you spend gear. But if you're not making a profit end of the year without even buying gear, then it's not your, don't buy gear.
It made no sense.
So scaling is, people scale too fast. They either get into debt or buy too much gear and they realize I bought all this gear and I'm not making enough money fast.
Yep.
I've seen there's been a couple companies fail in Utah, like where I'm from, right? Where mm-hmm. I started doing music, because someone's parents bought them the studio and they have to do the rent, and the parents are hoping this is going to be their first like business venture, mm-hmm. and it fails horribly because they don't know how to manage it and their overhead was too high. They had to jump into it.
Yeah.
So that happened at least two or three times that I can remember off the top of my head. And so I would say, number one, keep your overhead low, but as you grow, you'll be making more and more money, slowly charging more and more over time as you get frustrated. What else are like signs of how you should be charging more? And like,
I always tell people, once you're in the room with more credited people and you notice that the majority of your clientele has shifted in quality, you should shift into a higher price range, assuming that you've actually matched their quality. If you get in the room with Dr. Dre and you become his intern, you're not worth more than what you were. You're still an intern. Doesn't matter who for who. You still obviously don't know enough for them to pay you. So why would you charge their numbers?
Yeah. So, but that would also be going, let's talk about things that would impact charging more. And I would say number one is credits. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, engineering, producing is all about trust and who you know. And if you have bigger credits, then your work is spoken for. You don't have to prove anything. You worked with this bigger person, so you can charge more.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of how it works. No matter how good you are, if you don't chase the bigger credits, if you don't have bigger credits, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to charge bigger credit prices. And let's see, like a nice portfolio. I know a lot of people that have been engineering and producing for years, but they're not proud of their portfolio. That's usually the case. So they don't want to show it, or they don't have enough work and the portfolio is not big enough. Like, have you seen my DK Mixes portfolio of mixes that I've done? I've started it this year and I haven't really added any old mixes. I got hundreds of songs on there because I've done 1,000 records this year. I officially hit it.
Boom.
At the day that this episode releases, I've officially mixed 1,000 records this year. So,
fuck yeah.
Congratulations. I did a mix with our previous guest, Michael Van Wagner. I gave it a mix away for free because he was following me on Instagram. I said, I'm giving away a mix on Instagram, and he responded, and I picked him because he had a good song. I'm really excited for the song. Maybe we'll do another interview with him and another mix breakdown, but 1,000 records this year.
Boom.
Right. So I'm definitely frustrated with what I'm charging. Number one, that's a huge one. I'm not getting enough sleep. I think that's why I can raise my prices. I've gotten really big credits in the last few months, thanks to this guy, for like what, you know, the last few months I can start charging more. What else? I said portfolio has gotten bigger. What
Your
else?
Studio has expanded with the equipment list that most people don't have.
Yes. And also I think another reason that you can charge more as an engineer, even if you're freelancing, is how much knowledge you have in the sense of like deep knowledge. Do you know how to route a patch bay, or do you know how to patch up a patch bay? Like the deeper
that's
you can,
my demographic.
Can you solder a cable? Like, I mean, there's a lot of niches that you can go into, but knowledge is
my key thing on that demographic is can you be the engineer that solved all the issues before anybody realized there was an issue?
Boom. Knowledge. If you know a lot, more important than theoretical is practical. If you can actually pull apart a console piece module and fix that and put it back in without hurting the console, you're going to get paid more for doing stuff like that.
I know a guy's getting $200 an hour for that shit.
There you go. That is genuinely like you're going to get paid more because you have a very specific deep knowledge in something.
Yeah.
At the same time, what are we going to say about all the young kids right now? If you're young, if you're in high school, if you're not paying rent, if you have no overhead other than what you want to buy in the future, you know what I say? Get out of the problem of having nothing in your portfolio and record all of your friends for free as much as you possibly can when you're young.
Oh, yeah. Take the variety, not just the good ones.
Yeah. Like, you're going to learn how to mix better from your ass clients. I hate to say it.
Actually, I used to work with a singer who was so bad that I learned how to Melodyne. I learned how to use Wavestune and AutoTune Pro's graph mode. Just trying to figure out how to make them the best vocalist I possibly could.
There you go.
And guess what? Now I'm tuning vocals for like major name female artists. I'm just saying, like, shit that's on the radio that you wouldn't know was tuned, I tuned it.
Yeah, that's wild. See, that's a super, like, actually vocal tuning is a job out here. Like, mm-hmm. like it's literally a job out here. That's crazy to me, right?
Yeah, if you go to my Sound Better, you'll see it as an option for services.
So, okay, let's list the things they say you can that would raise your price. Your experience and credits.
Yep.
Your portfolio in quality and length.
Yep.
And in turn, experience, right? I would say your deep knowledge, not wide. Well, the wide works, just knowledge in general, how much mm-hmm. you know from practical experience.
And that you can actually apply.
There you go. What else? I would say you could charge more if your availability is really low. That's a new one.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't have a lot of time, if you're overbooked, raise your prices. Again, that usually goes hand in hand with the frustration part, right?
Yep, and that, I actually just did that. Somebody asked me to mix a song, and I told him, like, hey, right now, unfortunately, I'm only accepting my full rate. Like, I'm not doing any hookups for people. There's no, like, hey, man, I'll do it for this much of this time to help you out. Like, unfortunately, I really can't take any more work. So unless you're paying my full price, I'm sorry, I just can't take it.
Yep. It's true that, true that. So what are some other things that would make you, what are some things that would keep you from charging more?
Things that would keep you from charging more is having bad reference tracks for them to listen to. Don't choose your friend's song because it's your friend and you want to show your friend off to people.
Well, I mean, like, you, so lack of skill is...
Lack of skill and knowledge of the client. So, for instance, like, if I were to say, I want to become Keisha Cole's mixing engineer, I'm not going to show her the songs I mixed for Metallica.
Yeah.
That's wrong in every way. You need to actually have a pretty wide portfolio to actually appeal to different people. For instance, like, a lot of people like to say, like, post-hardcore is, like, pop and metal mixed together because they got the auto-tuned vocals heavy metal guitars. If you're really good at auto-tune vocals but have never dealt with the band, that's probably something you want to expand in so that you can now pitch to that demographic. Sometimes you got to blend genres to be able to branch out. But have a portfolio that's wide.
Yeah, a wide portfolio. I would say things that would keep you from, obviously, lack of skill or lack of knowledge or lack of hours experience. It's going to keep you from
lack of references.
Charging more, lack of references. I would say a lack of history. If you even if you're amazing, but you've only been doing it for 3 months.
A lack of marketing, whether it be like social media, Twitch, anything, you know.
Yeah, and usually engineers are the types to not really be doing it. A lot of social media.
Yeah, most of my favorite engineers tend to be under 10,000 followers.
Yeah, and let's see. What are some other things that would keep your... But that's not keeping their prices low, but I'm saying like marketing is... As in nobody knows.
No, I mean, I'm just saying if you had somebody like Jason Joshua's Instagram account where you're constantly posting about being in front of an SSL and ATCs and playing back a mix of a known artist... regularly, even if you have 1,000 followers, that's a 1,000 people who are following you most likely because they are actual fans of your work. And if they themselves are in that market...
Well, he's got like 45,000 or something.
But
like
my
that.
Point is, yeah, but check it out. Of those 45,000, I'm sure that there's 1,000 hardcore Jason Joshua fans.
Oh, yeah. I'm one of them.
People that are going... yeah, people that go to Mix with the Masters website and download his
videos. It's more than 1,000, bro. It's probably more like 45,000 people. I would say 30,000 are hardcore fans.
Yeah, see, and this is what I'm saying. So lack of marketing could mean anything. It doesn't mean that you have millions of followers. It's just that... hey, some people would really love to know what you're doing.
Yeah, and I don't think that Instagram followers count for anything because, for example, Serban Gania is one of the like most famous mixing engineers, mm-hmm. and he gets hired for everything, but he barely uses social media. Nobody even knows who he is unless you're an engineer yourself.
Yeah.
Like, probably most people listening to this podcast has never heard of Serban. But I guarantee that the people who have heard of Serban know that he is the GOAT. He is one of the GOATs. So I would say... people who know of you doesn't mean you have to have a lot of followers on Instagram, but I would say if word of mouth is super slow, then obviously you need to be charging less. I would say a competitive marketplace. If your neighbors are, if you, like Brian Hood asks this on Six Figure Home Studio, which they ended recently, by the way, and actually we're going to talk about Brian in a second, but he said that if you don't have anything that differentiates you between you and the studio down the street, like, you got to think about what's different about you. Like, why can you charge just as much or more than the person down the street? Do you have a different niche? Do you have a different audience? Do you have more stuff? Like, what is it? Maybe it's not stuff. Maybe that you're able to provide more services. Maybe that you're able to do music videos in your studio and the other person doesn't. So that's one thing that separates you, differentiates you. But in your marketplace, if there's nothing that differentiates you and if you have a lot of competitors and you're trying to compete with them in the genre and in the niches that they're also doing, if there's nothing that differentiates you, you probably can't charge as much.
Nope.
I mean, you're going to
at least not successfully.
Yeah, like you don't want to be in a position where the only thing differentiating you from other studios is that you have a lower price.
And here's the thing. You may have all the same thing, but they may also have much more experience than you.
Absolutely.
You may be the little guy when it comes to clientele, so even then, you cannot charge as much, even if the playing field is the same outside of experience.
So talking about that, so Brian Hood said that on Six Figure Home Studio. I think the podcast ended officially after 150 episodes, so I think that's 3 years that they did that.
Nice.
They amassed a huge following. They're doing a bigger adventure right now. I think it's like Six Figure Creative or something like that, going beyond recording and studio and music. Doing more than that, doing more general business for creatives. And I think I'm really excited. I'm really excited for everything that they're doing. Brian hit me up a few weeks ago, and I've already mentioned this. FilePass is Brian's creation. Have you tried FilePass?
No, I think I actually got one for
the studio. I got an account for the studio.
Yeah, I think I saw you using it, but I don't really use it too much myself.
We just wanted to give a shout out once again to our sponsor, FilePass. FilePass is a website that you can, just like Dropbox or Google Drive, you can send links to your clients folders. It's like a cloud service, but you can set it behind a paywall. So they can't download the files unless they pay for it. Or you can make it free so there's no payment thing and you can just block downloads. And clients can also upload directly via your link as well if you send the upload link. So they can send you files and whatnot, and keeps you from getting scammed. It's genuinely awesome. And playback, it's made by an engineer. So when you upload Wave, unlike Dropbox and Google Drive, it actually plays back the raw Wave file. There's no encoding or compression at all.
Nice. Actually, that's...
And they
really
can leave timestamp comments, et cetera, et cetera.
Dropbox does, right?
Dropbox does compress it. Dropbox does have the timestamp comments, but I'm not. Dude, FilePass, I've been a fan. I've been part of their, like, since the beginning.
Gotcha.
I'm a huge fan of
it.
And it's made me a lot of money, actually. My profits went up about 30% when I downloaded it.
Really?
Yeah, like, genuinely. Because now I felt safe. I wasn't insecure.
Yeah.
So because they can't screw me over by not paying for stuff. So I could offer out and be like, yo, pay for me after the session.
Yeah.
So that's actually one way that I actually raise my prices is that, hey, you can charge, pay for, get a discount or my regular rate up front, or you can pay a little bit extra and pay at the end or pay half and half, or if you want to pay month to month or whatever, put in payments, whatever, I could do it through FilePass.
Is payments an option?
Well, you can pay for part of it, and then they still can't download it until it's fully paid for.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that's
but I mean,
cool.
I could do like demo mixes as well, and demo so they can't download it and use it, so I don't have to put in a tag every single time I do a demo mix, so they can't use it. It's really nice, actually. So, FilePass, thank you for supporting our show. We've now been able to acquire funds to run more ads for the podcast.
That's good.
And to be honest, we grew this show very big. Just a little bit for everybody. We have grown exponentially since we first started, and we want to thank every single listener listening right now. Thank you so much for listening. You've been supporting us and been really helping us grow as a business, as a company, and as engineers. We've been learning a lot from this, and thank you for coming along with the journey. As always, we do mix feedback. You can order mix feedback from mixingmusicpodcast.com. We do $20 for some feedback on the mix at the current time. And what else do we want to pitch? Anything? Pitch something, Lou. Pitch in Lou.
I will sell you my socks.
No.
With a master.
No. Oh, gosh. You're going to get perverts in your inbox.
Oh, please no. Please no. No. I'm talking about fresh socks, not something I wore. I'm going to go to Target, buy socks for myself, and then mail them out. Like,
yo,
just to
Lou's
be clear.
Selling his used socks.
No, clean socks. Clean. Unworn.
Starting the bid at $500. Yo, some
you know
heavy
what?
Perverts.
You know what? If all they want is my socks,
$500
for $500,
you'd be dumb.
Yeah, I'm
you'd
just
be dumb
saying,
not to
like,
take that.
Hey, I'm just saying, I don't have to meet them, right?
Yo, I don't care if you're a dude or a girl
or a dog.
I don't care. I'm gonna take. I'm gonna send you my socks.
You know what? If you're a cat, it's off. No cats.
Anyway, on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
If you'd like to take advantage of my free guides and online videos, please check out links.dkmixes.com. That's links.dekeimixes.com. The Mixing Music Podcast is proud to say that we have a lot of free resources outside of the actual podcast. Visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/links to find access to our free PDFs and free resources.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.